You are listening to Jaya Ashmore. You can find hundreds of meditations and talks on my websites, jayaashmore.org, jayaashmore.org, as well as opendharma.org, opendharma.org. All the recordings are offered in the tradition of generosity or dana, and your gifts are welcome. Thank you for listening. Would anyone like to ask or share anything?
So like yesterday, I was talking that, you know, my conscious mind is kind of feeling depressed and resisting this, and I can feel it in my body. And another part of me, the subconscious part of me, is kind of forcing myself to come here and do this. So really funnily, today morning when I got up with this amazing amount of earache. And it's always happened like this with me, that if my conscious mind is resisting something, my body will automatically, in a strange way, fall ill. So like even when I was a child, and if I didn't want to go to school, I'd get up with fever or stomachache or stuff like that. And it was there. It was not something that I make up. It was actually there. And again, so this earache is happening to me after, like, I remember as a child I used to have it, and I never had it. And I got up with that in the morning. So I'm feeling that resistance. But again, so coming here, I told myself it's okay. So if I'm sleeping in the room, I might as well sleep here, so I can do it here too. So it's like dragging yourself here. And I've always felt that any growth or any beginning is always very painful. Like even like giving birth is like a painful process. So I also feel that maybe this kind of growth is also painful at some level. And I also realize this is not something that's going to happen like in 7 days or 10 days, or it's also something that you have to consciously imbibe in yourself. And
And how is it practicing with pain in your head? Having the pain inside your head?
So I started taking antibiotics and painkillers and everything. But it's almost like I can't hear from one side. But it's okay, I mean, so
I'm not sure if I feel comfortable with calling it the subconscious mind that pulls you here. I don't know if I could give a name, but I just wanted to say that. Yes, it's not meant to be a trick, but that we say deep rest retreat, and then you get here and it turns out to be like this really hard thing and more rigorous than if we would just tell you what to do and you could just be obedient and count the hours and then be done and feel proud. And there's also the way that so much happens in 7 days that we continue kind of finding out over the next 7 years, let's say. But it's true, I agree that it's not. It's a wonderful that you could realize already that it's also not meant to be a trick, that it's a 7-day retreat. But once you start, there's no turning back. It's sort of a lifetime of service. And then it's also important to gradually start to feel where it's maybe a different kind of dragging yourself there. So I always remember one guy in Saskatchewan, Canada, which is until you go there, it just is sort of, it just means really far away in the middle of nowhere, but it actually exists. And it was just a 4-day retreat, and towards the end, he talked about what he realized, he remembered, he always knew, but he remembered that what he really loves to do is play his guitar, but that his guitar stays in the closet. And even though he didn't describe the closet, but it made such an impression on me as this clear metaphor for all of us. I have an image of the closet doors and the guitar inside there. But that kind of, it's like a membrane around the guitar or whatever your thing or things are, that it's hard to get ourselves to go through. And then once we're in, we don't want to leave. So it's good to have different practices that work like a kind of friction, gradually sanding away, sanding away, sanding away. Our fears. And it's good to find these sort of pockets of what we always love to do that we kind of know and kind of don't know. We kind of remember and kind of don't remember. And to honor that as equal practice to going to the hall when it's hard to go to the hall and getting yourself on the cushion when it's hard to. And kind of, yesterday we talked about, about the hypocrisy of the mind or of the projections or of wherever there's a charge around an emotional charge or resentment or whatever around a particular subject. And so it could easily happen that we start to feel the importance of meditation, the importance of silence, etc. And so easily then we want to protect the silence and the meditation. And it just already there's some aggression. And it's almost like asking it to get threatened so I can protect it. And then feeling, well, if we let go of that protection, but it's still important and it's so easy to forget. And so this really other kind of rigor, so rigor in any other languages, like Hebrew and French and rigueur. De rigueur. Do you know what that word is? Shai, do you know rigor in Hebrew? Do you know it?
Yeah.
Okay, well, it's always interesting, I find, to go into the... Oh, so, do you know Hebrew?
Yeah, it's coming.
Okay. It's interesting to go into the English words that we could just use and not really go into them, but and so it's good to go into it because it's hard. It's really hard to get what I'm trying to say by using the word rigor. Rigor mortis would be like when the body is dead and it gets really stiff and whatever hard, like inflexible, which is not what I mean. But it has in it that feeling of stiff. It could be stiffness. We would tend to think if we hear rigor, we're like, oh, right, sit up straight. And we stop breathing and stuff. Okay. No way to know. Bubblegum, you know, whatever. I think, like, all our lives we keep looking for that really hard thing to do that will do. And here it is. Except it's never done. And it's to feel when we go to like wanting to protect that secret love. And when we come down into being in service of it. And we don't like the idea of being in service. Like protector. Is a job. And servant isn't the job that we want, we think. And then something's missing. A whole life. So it's fun on silent retreat to play around with this, like Marie's question the other day about when we take a similar situation one way and then we take this a similar situation the other way a few hours later, a few minutes later. And so there's a really easy way of playing with any sound that you like, let's say. It just melts your heart. But if you would find out that what that sound is like, I don't know, a lizard eating a baby bird or something. You know, it would be like, ow, every time you heard that sound. Same sound. And any sound you like that is just like, ah! You would hear that it's like this very rare Himalayan tortoise that lives underground and only comes out once in 100 years. And all who hear the sound, you know, whatever, are just blessed, and it's like one of those time release capsules. It just goes on. That might be hard because we'd be like trying to hear it all the time. Is that it? Like I'm with the leopard. Is that the leopard? No, it's a cow. Is that the leopard? No, it's a motorcycle. I heard the leopard today, though. I did. I think. One morning. I was sure it was the leopard. I was like, Anetsuji, I heard the leopard. It was, and I tried to make the sound, which was a disaster. And and then the same sound came, and it was definitely a cow.
But the same
morning,
there was a leopard.
Yeah.
An hour
later.
Yeah.
What did it sound like?
I've heard that that's what it sounds like. It sounds just like a hand saw.
Someone's going to start sawing. <He's> like,
there's no moo.
Well, it wasn't going moo. I'm not. The cow was not going moo. You'll hear the cow tomorrow morning, probably. It's definitely not a cow like sound. One of my best friends from since I was a child was a lawyer for decades, and then she decided to get a real job. So she was working in a, I don't know if you have these outside of the United States. But it's where you take your pet for the day. Or it could be overnight also. If you have a pet, like pig, there's a pet pig, for example. Pig or a dog or any pet that you want to leave it somewhere for the day while you work or maybe the weekend or something. So like a pet spa, actually. So she was working as the receptionist there. And she loved it. Loved it. She loved it. People would, and she, it must have been amazing to take your pet to her because she would really listen. So, you know, Fluffy is really feeling a little sensitive today. He might want to play with the smaller animals for a while. Especially after the meal. And she started to realize that what they were saying about Damon's a veterinarian. You might have had noticed this, I don't know. She realized that they were telling about themselves. Is that, you notice that? And so she would just really listen.
I have a cat, so I
can So great, if you have a pet, you could play around with this. Like, instead of, we have what's going on with me. We have what's going on with me, right? But we're too embarrassed to just say how involved we are with what's going on with me. And if we could just go to my friend Catherine and just like check it in with her, or even just tell her, you know, that my dog Rugby has a lot of energy today, or he's feeling a bit aggressive. You might want to keep him on his own. Or put him in the, you know, that like sensory soothing chamber for a while. Or use really warm water when you do the shampoo or whatever. I think that one of the main obstacles is that we do have our story going on. We are involved in it, but we won't just say it, even to ourselves. And if Catherine would just be there. And it could be about our pet, whom we love. And we're paying you to take care of the pet, so we feel like you should listen. You're not going to laugh at me. While I'm standing here, at least. And then I think we could go on with everything else. Like, there is a certain amount of kind of maintenance for that level of story that we need to take care around. But because we just don't directly say it and do it, I don't mean to tell each other. Please. Even when you're not in silence, you don't have to tell everybody. Sometimes the right person. But just say it directly to yourself. That's all. And then there can be this other kind of plane of experience, where we could be really caring about when we slip out of serving life into protecting something. Because when we go into protecting, we lose everything. We lose everything. And it happens faster than a second. You hear a sound, and you're in your story, and you're embarrassed to just say, this is my story. And you know why, because you didn't sleep well last night, or you had a hard dream, or you're nervous because the retreat's going to supposedly be ending at some point in the near future. And you don't just go, look, that's just a thought. Bus. Feel your back. Fluffy is having a nice warm bath. Just feel your feet. And it's not an insult. Just again, that reversal where we take it as an insult, and so we give up our dignity. So just this really realizing that there was a sound, and you didn't like it. And maybe it matters or maybe it doesn't that it reminds you of this, this, this. Or you feel responsible about this, this, this. You feel protective of this, this, this. And maybe it doesn't matter. But it does matter in that moment to you that you just threw away your dignity for a story. Icy window, windy snow moon, tangled among black flowers, the mind is water wrapping itself where it is, around what, never the same. So that this kind of story making mind that's just, it's gonna just keep wrapping around something. And he says, what, never the same. We could also say, what, always the same. When we feel disturbed, the disturbance is inside, no matter what. And it doesn't mean there's some, that you're wrong or right. That's just your situation. If you feel disturbed, the disturbance is in your mind and body. And people have been in concentration camps, etc., and have discovered this. So whatever happens, and it might be really great not to have to get to such an extreme to discover. Flowers are silent. Silence is silent. The mind is a silent flower. The silent flower of the world opens. If we just get a little bit of room for something else. And of course, it doesn't mean that our fears, then they're gonna all walk all over me. Or then as if I'm saying, no, never respond to anything. Flowers are silent. Silence is silent. The mind is a silent flower. The silent flower of the world opens. Just gently, we start to kind of agree with our dignity and let the experience come into our body-mind as a learning that when we're serving life and we're serving whatever it is that brings you alive and allows your whatever your way of being overexcited is, to just die down, to know itself as unneeded. It's going from one world to another world. The mind is a silent flower. The silent flower of the world opens. Just with the gentle resting into that it's okay that your story is there and that your story is not all, that your dignity is untouched by any story, two of my favorite phrases from Gautam Buddha's teaching. In the seeing, just the seeing. In the hearing, just the hearing. The mind is a silent flower. The silent flower of the world opens. Is there any question or anything to share?
The thing is, my nightmares are back.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I have avoided like 25 years of my life to block those nightmares.
Mm-hmm.
They are back. And maybe I'm prepared right now to face them, but it's just very strong emotion.
Yeah.
I'm feeling scared. I'm feeling, you know, I'm feeling that my guard is sleeping. So
yeah.
I don't know how to handle it.
Yeah. And what happens? Like, do you wake in the night?
Yeah.
With it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm a very sound sleeper, basically, because
mm-hmm.
I have blocked them.
Mm-hmm.
Now I wake up around, say, like 4 or 5 times
mm-hmm.
in the night.
And what do you do?
Nothing, just drink water, look around,
mm-hmm.
that nobody's there.
Yeah.
I told you about
yeah.
my history.
Yeah. Some, it might be hard when there's fear to do this, but a couple things can help there. But first, I just want to say, you put it beautifully. You said you feel your guard is slipping.
Yeah.
And this can be a good slipping, even though it's really hard. So for while we have to, we put a guard up so that we're not just overwhelmed all the time. And it's not just to throw that away, but to find a way of letting that guard start to slip and then coming back into something where you feel safe, good, strong, creative, loved, belonging, with help, with resources, people, and also in yourself. But it's also, so it's kind of like letting things start to move so that it can start to move out of you, but not in such a way that it moves so that it takes over and hurts you more. So one thing that can be really, really helpful, but it's a little eccentric. And I know, because I also had the similar situation and similar with nightmares. So it can be hard if you wake up from a nightmare to get up and to go take a bath. So it could be just to start with maybe some water on your face. Or it could just be even to go out of the room is too much, or to go into the bathroom is too much, but open the window and fresh air. Or looking at nature. It's something about water seems to help. If we're asleep, habit energy takes over. The past like floods through your body chemistry. It seems to wash that away. I don't know why. So that can be one thing. And then it can be like get up, take a bath, go back to bed. Your drinking water is already cool that you discovered that. You can maybe just sometimes what is like that smallest step that you can do that's not too terrifying, and just like sprinkle blessing. You could have even like a leaf next, and you could, you know, like actually dip and bless. And then you'll start to find your resources to have with you and have it ready. Like, it's a way of that you care for yourself. You know nightmares probably come. It's not to invite them or set it up as like I'm going to protect myself from the nightmares, which is an invitation to the nightmares, but still, next to the bed, you have your glass of water, right? Or your water bottle, whatever. You could also have your yantra or your mantra or your teddy bear. saw something, like I said before, like that texture matters, especially to that part of us. A stone that you feel, that ground or that hardness that says, no. And then sometimes you might get up and you splash water, you get fresh air, or you take a bath, something. Or even just a few longer breaths. Feeling the feet, feeling the big toe, holding the big toe. Doing this jinshin. And you feel, maybe I do a little bit of yoga or qigong or something that I learned, something. And with yoga, it can be nice because just you happen to end up in Shavasana and you happen to fall asleep there. And you might just have a cushion to go under your knees, just happens to be there in case.
Yeah, I can't sleep here. Otherwise, whole ashram will know that I am sleeping.
No, not here, but in your space. Yeah, in case people are meditating here.
So the same thing happened to me last night. And I was so scared, like I was just so convinced that there is probably a ghost somewhere. And I would not look out of my window also. I just put the blanket on top of me and
Yeah. It happens. So it's just starting to come into where the body would know more or less a natural way of releasing that toxic whatever we could call it. It's almost like a toxic substance in us that's just been held there.
Yeah.
And if we would just vomit it out, it would burn us. So, but the body knows, body, mind. But we have to remember that natural and remember to trust the body, mostly trusting. Usually like some kind of intuition comes of stay with it or don't stay with it. Look at the flower, touch the flower, something else. And we're like, no, I'm supposed to stay with it or whatever. But it's only by practicing that we start to get it. By making mistakes, we start to get kind of, it comes back. And as we said yesterday, it's not just this me up here that has to figure it out and practice and think about it and get good and make sure through analysis that I know what I'm doing and keep checking that I'm doing it right. We're just getting enough close to this natural wisdom, if we can say, that we, it's kind of like, what could be a metaphor? Let's say, this is silly, but anyway, We get on this train, we get on the train to start getting our speed up. So technique, Jaya said stay with it, Jaya said change the channel, Jaya said whatever, and so-and-so said, and whatever podcast I can find in the middle of the night to give me company, or music or something. Okay. And we're learning to give permission that you feel like listening to music, oh, but we're on a silent retreat. Or you feel like listening to music, like in a way of compulsive, and like you really feel for silence. So we learn by practicing, by experiencing. But eventually it's as if we got the speed up on the train that then we can fly. And that's also a practice of like leaving the train with its particular rhythm that we've gotten used to, it's got reassuring, and then we're flying. The only rhythm is our own one. So it's not a great metaphor, but anyway. One of the rhythms that is part of releasing the toxic is that there's a rhythm of feeling good and feeling not good. Being in touch with what's painful and then being in touch with where we feel whole and happy or sunny or whatever, cool, whatever. And if we just know that, we'll be less likely to get stuck on, oh, I'm feeling good, I'm done, I got rid of my nightmares again, or whatever. Which would be almost like saying, oh good, I got rid of my dog, which we don't want to do. We want to learn how to listen to the dog and find out how to take care of all that. How to be in touch with the way things really are in a way that's not suffering. But it's a process of releasing that toxic, meanwhile, that gives a context where we learn. And one of the kind of core places of learning is actually a lot what you just said earlier, Payalji, of that it's hard, that it can be painful and in a good way. So somewhere we go along as if it's painful, it's wrong. Either I've done something wrong or someone's done something wrong or both. If it's pleasant, it's right. Or it's a reward. So I've done something right or something. I'm good. I got a reward. If it hurts, I'm bad. I got a punishment. And so I find it fascinating. There's a kind of therapy tool that you can also do on yourself that's called emotional freedom technique. And the whole thing that it gets at is, so it's for, you're tapping different places of your body and you find out what is the thing that's got an energy charge. Where's the charge? What is it? And so then it's even though that happened, even though I was unsafe when I was that age, I completely love and accept myself. And then you tap different things. And then all the key that you just say, the thing that happened or the thing that's got charge. And it's just breaking this somewhere deep. I don't know what to call it. It's much more than an assumption. It's much more than a belief. It feels like direct experience, that. And it's so deep that we can't quite even acknowledge. It would be weird to say, I don't completely love and accept myself because someone did that to me. We think, oh, no, that's... But it seems to work in terms of healing for a lot of people. So it could be worth checking. Freedom technique, EFT is how it's often called. Mm-hmm. And there's good, by the way, in case you want, plenty of videos online, of course. But I think what's cool about any of these sort of new, it's not just self-help, it's actually giving you a technique that helps you tap into didn't mean to. That was not on purpose. Just exactly that root of how we take the way things are in a way that is suffering and how we could take the way things are in a way that's not suffering. And this is a big part of it right there. Does that make sense?
Through tapping?
Like
through
whatever, you know, adding whatever on, tapping or eye movement or
okay.
A loving, mm-hmm. listening person. Mm-hmm. Like all the, everything else is like the add-ons at the spa. But the basic treatment is, if it hurts, it's not necessarily a punishment. And if it feels good, it's not necessarily a reward. And what could help us disbelieve that it's about punishment and reward at all? What could help us stop being in that place that is expecting punishment and reward to guide me, to be my guiding force, to be my master? And where is our dignity? It's right here. So it's not that the world is not real, but how we take it. It's not that the world causes suffering. There's pain and pleasure, but it's not that the world causes suffering, but the way we take it causes suffering. And the relief from the suffering is available through, we've talked about it last week as bigness and this week as smallness, and last week as awe and this week as humility, which is different. It can sound, we can get confused there because big and small and up and down, above, below, it sounds like it's the same. And it could be helpful to feel the difference from when I feel in a lovely way small under the night sky, or even under an eagle, or even next to an ant, in a way. That's nothing to do with below or above. It's already not about measurement, just happily small. And then when last week we talked about happily big, where the night sky opens up something, wow, like that whole heart, as wide as the world. And I think there it can be easy that we are worried that that bigness, is that about putting myself up? Is that ego? What if I... I think in practice, the night sky, like, it's pretty hard to own. And even a dog, like, it's a funny thing to think of owning. And maybe that starts to come across in even the way our story moves. It's somehow alive, somehow programmed. And maybe it's a little weird to think about owning it. Yes, my love.
I just wanted to ask if you could explain a bit more how you use the word dignity.
So there's a Dutch woman, Etty Hillesum, that I mentioned sometimes, who in a concentration camp in World War II talked about how life is beautiful. And before she was sent to the concentration camp, she was sometimes visiting, bringing packages to people, taking care of people, but living in the city. And gradually the rules were coming down. So then another day, another rule of where Jewish people could go or not go in the city. And this can be a really, actually, when there's difficult situations that have made us feel small in that down way, in that abandoned, left alone, humiliated, helpless way. That sometimes that gives a kind of push through to feel, well, actually, no matter what anyone says, even if I can't go there. And so she was bicycling along a path and feeling that no one could take away the sky above her. Sometimes when there is something that is, someone is trying to humiliate, or we do feel humiliated, or we do feel helpless. Or we do take something as lower than. That can be a push that makes us find some other kind of ground or reference point. And so she talked about humiliation needs two people. And in that situation. So that for me is always inspiring. If I feel like, well, I might not have the authority because I haven't been in a concentration camp in my memory. But if it's possible there, it's possible here. So dignity is feeling no one owns the sky. And this can be from another side, that the way that even our stories and habit energies are not personal, not mine. They're not anybody's. Nothing is anybody's, in a way. And so even when someone claims something and acts as if they have some kind of authority, there can be a knowing that that's ridiculous. And there can be staying true to serving life, serving freedom, and staying with that, even when, of course, there may be, as she also had hard days, there may be some friction emotionally if someone is like questioning our right to be ourselves, to even exist. And staying with serving life and freedom, many times a way gets found through what could have been impossible if we had tried to think too soon about it or act too soon. So dignity, another way to say it is, even though, fill in the blank, I completely love and accept myself, even though, fill in the blank, I am completely lovable and acceptable, etc. And you can keep taking it less and less personal and more just. When we feel threatened, and that equals disturbed, threatened equals disturbed, uneasy, then so quickly we want to impose order. Before we know it, we want to impose order. But then our own experience has already told us that order is not so trustworthy. It's not the most trustworthy. Sometimes there's a place for it, but we need to know we're playing with fire when we play with order. And we also can notice that sometimes out of chaos comes something unexpectedly graceful. And it's not about trusting chaos or trusting order, but we're taught to trust order and to distrust chaos. And so a little bit of practice around that can help come to trusting no thing. Trusting, so someone asked to speak a little bit more about emptiness, more precisely, which I thought was a great question. It's impossible. But some of the words we've used for that, so it's not that emptiness is important. It's that there is something about the way things are that we tend to leave out to not be in touch with, to not acknowledge, to not be with or whatever. And so practicing to be with that. But last week, where there's the bare tree, but springtime, uncaring springtime. So we've talked about body intelligence. That's another word for emptiness. It's not just the absence of programming, but what happens in the absence of imposing order is an emergence of some other kind of intelligence, emergence, things coming together gracefully. It's hard. It can be painful because it doesn't obey our preference. It keeps cracking us and our heart especially open. Yesterday, the lower me, that's, I wanted to say, it's, so not the subconscious mind, just, but something else that comes through. And it's not a guarantee of a good outcome. But as we find that what is trustworthy keeps coming out of nowhere. What was that, Kathleen Rain, that you wrote me?
I don't know the exact words, but about trusting, entrusting the mystery of oneself to the bigger mystery.
It was something about it's only that mystery that we can, where we can entrust the mystery of ourselves. We entrust ourselves to our story so much. And the story kind of actually needs help. And if we just let the story be small and include what's also big, entrusting ourselves to big mind, aliveness, emergence, intelligence, emptiness, nothing, smallness, bigness, humility, awe. My friend Catherine. And then we're okay with the no guarantee. We're not looking anymore for a guarantee. May all beings be peaceful, filled with awe, pulled by grace. Serving love or life. With all our ever-widening heart. May we be part of a momentum towards awakening for all, including ourselves.